This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I'm wonderful. It's a beautiful day.
Every Saturday is a beautiful day.
I know, but every Saturday I want to say it's a beautiful day because I feel good. I feel that it's wonderful to be alive and be a Texan.
Do you feel the same thing on a random Tuesday, or is it just on Saturday?
No. I feel good every day that I'm a Texan, but especially on Saturdays.
Excellent.
Because Saturdays is your fun day.
Yes.
You don't have any obligations on Saturday.
No.
There's nobody saying you need to go do this, you need to do that. You know, it's your day. It's not somebody else's day. That's what I like.
Yeah, exactly. And then Sunday is the day of rest, and then we go back at it on Monday.
That's right. Sunday's the day of rest. First, you've got to get up, have a nice breakfast with the family, go to church. Always go to lunch on Sundays. You know, my husband was really great about that. He always said, you do not cook on Sundays. I take you to lunch on Sundays.
Uh-huh.
And, man, I love that theory. I think every husband should have that theory.
Yeah.
My wife does not cook on Sundays.
Yeah. I'm always used to going over to Grandma's house on Sunday, and she's cooking for like an army, and everybody kind of piles in, you know, here and there, and they come and then they go, and they eat lunch, and something's on the stove, and there's chicken and gravy and whatever
else.
Oh,
yeah, now you're talking, yes.
Yeah.
That's big time.
Oh.
And we do that a lot at my house. You know, if they can get me to cook, you know, everybody comes. Everybody shows up because they know that I'm going to cook something wonderful, and they're going to spend the afternoon, and they're going to love it.
Yes.
You know?
It's almost like bribery to get the whole family to come over, and it works.
It does work. You say, you know, Mimi is going to cook. Well, that's all it takes.
Yep.
They don't care what it is. They know it'll be something that they can't get at the restaurant or the store.
Yep, and they get to spend time with the rest of the family, and so it's a win-win for everybody.
That's right, everybody. You know, everybody, it kind of takes a siesta almost after lunch, you know that.
Yeah,
you They get in those big chairs, and they just kind of relax out, you know?
Yep, kind of stare at the TV for a little while. Eventually you wake up, and it's 4:30 in the afternoon.
That's right, and it's been a wonderful day. And, of course, in the meantime, at my house, anyway, they go see the llamas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody has to go down and talk to the llamas. And that's an important deal. You know, the llamas miss us, and they need to see our smiling faces.
Well, they like to socialize, too, don't they?
They are very sociable. They are.
Do you take them a plate of food, or do they eat their own thing?
They eat their own food, and they're not like other animals. You know, when we first got them 4 or 5 years ago, everybody thought they would eat carrots, apples. They turned all of that down.
Really?
They've never eaten an apple. They've never eaten a carrot. They like nibbies that we buy for them at the store.
Huh.
They do not seem to want to do all that.
Huh.
And, you know, other animals do. Horses do it all kinds of
Yeah, you feed a horse a carrot, and they're, you know, happy.
Oh, they're happy. Yeah, or a sugar cube. They'll take anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but llamas, no.
Huh.
Or maybe other people's llamas do. Mine don't.
Yeah.
And they just turn their head up and won't even put their face down.
Well, that's interesting.
I think it's very interesting.
I wonder if they would eat, like, cake or cookies.
I haven't tried cake and cookies.
It's probably
Man,
not a good
if
idea.
If they did that, they'd be up here in the kitchen.
Yeah. Just open the window and feed them a plate out the window. You take it right off the stove, and here you go.
That's almost, well, you know, we met people in Florida that there's come in the house.
Do they really?
Yes, they said their llamas come right in the house. And I go, man, you know, I'm just not quite ready for that.
Yeah, I think that'd be a bit much.
For me, it'd be a little bit too much. Yeah. I love them dearly, but I don't want them in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, those little sharp hooves, I would not appreciate that. Yeah,
I can see you taking a nap in the chair, and all of a sudden you open your eyes, and there's a llama right in your face.
Yes, I think I can understand that.
It'd be cute, but probably a little unsanitary.
I think it probably would. Now, they do come up the fence, and they do give us kisses.
Uh-huh.
You know, we always let them kiss us. But I think this is as far as they should go.
Yeah, you have to draw that line.
Yeah, you got to have some place to stop always, you know. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wonderful. All right, Faye, what's your phone number there at the office?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And the whole point of Your Money with Faye Bagby is to teach people how to get ready for retirement. And this is a plan, and we talk about this all the time. Getting ready is not just, hey, I'm going to do one thing and then that's it. You have to get the ball rolling. And then there's lots of things that happen over several years. But as far as getting the ball rolling, that main event, that main jump starter, what is the thing that people need to do like immediately if they haven't already started planning for retirement?
Well, first, they've got to quit procrastinating. You know, we don't talk about it enough, but people procrastinate till it gets later and later and later. You know, maybe take 3 months, 6 months, a year, before they come to see me. And, you know, we know they should come in and talk about it. It may not be right for them, but it might be. And so there's no risk talking to us. They need to come in, bring all of their financials and what they're doing now. What are they doing to make money for retirement? Is it all in the stock market? Is it in real estate? I mean, I just don't know what they've got. They may have annuities. They may have old annuities that are stock market dominated. You know, there's two kinds of annuities. There's a fixed rate annuity, or there is a variable annuity, which is just like the stock market. So they might have those. They may have it all in mutual funds. They may have it in stocks. You know, I just don't know what they've got. They may have an IRA. So we need to bring all their financials. Let us look at it and see what we can do. And let's plan a plan. Are you going to retire in 5 years, 7 years, or tomorrow? You know, lots of people do not come to see me till 2 months before retirement.
Whoa.
So in that case, we have to take what they've already got and make money with it. Now, if they come 5 years, 7 years, you know, we can do a lot of different things to get them ready for retirement. But if they come in 2 months before retirement, what we have to work with is whatever they have in their 401k and their IRA. That's all there is. So it depends, you know, what they've been doing. So we don't know if they've saved and got $300,000, $500,000, or maybe $1 million.
But regardless, whatever they've got is you know, in their different collections, their different piles, as we like to say sometimes, they've been saving it, but that's probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just kind of guessing here, that's probably not going to make the money that they need to be making by doing like a life settlement type of investment. Is that accurate?
That's right, because they may have things that are not producing interest. You know, they're worth something, but they may not be giving them dividends or interest. Like if they've got all stock, they've got to start selling stock to give them income, to give them income for the future. So they may have stocks that are giving interest. I don't know. But I do know that what we do gives them interest to live on, where they don't have to take money out of the principal. So that is always our goal, to make them enough interest that every month they have interest to live on, where they do not have to take it out of their principal.
So I guess
everybody makes approximately 1% a month on their investment.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about our investment, you know going in on each investment what you're going to make. You know if you're going to make 20%, 15, 12, 6. You know, if it's short-term, if it's a 12-month policy, you're going to make 12%. If it's a 24-month policy, you're going to make 24. And we've had several lately, little ones, come in that pay 30% because they came in early. You still got the 30% that you would have gotten if it went all the way out.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like about the investment is you know what you're going to make. You know you'll get your principal back. It doesn't matter what happens. That principal is invested in a life insurance policy.
You get the same amount, you just get it faster.
That's right. And you know that that life insurance company is going to pay off. You know, we've never had a life insurance company in Texas not pay, you know, what they own. Not pay, if it's $1 million policy, they're going to pay $1 million. They're not going to ask you to discount that policy. And that's what I like, is you know what life insurance company your money's in. You know which one and what their rating is. We tell you right on that page 14, it tells you if it's A-rated, AA-rated, whatever the rating is of the company. And as you know, we've always kept it to stage that we know that it's A or AA-rated.
So you had mentioned a minute ago that some people come to you like 2 months before they plan to retire. They haven't been investing in this type of way. They may have a 401k. They may have some other assets in other places, but it's not growing. It's just kind of like sitting there. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And lots of times it's not doing anything. You know, lots of times in New York City, they show all this huge profit. But out here in our country, what are they actually making on their investments? You know, New York is different. They have all kinds of screwy deals, you know, to make money. But sometimes it doesn't translate out here.
So
people are not making that much here sometimes as they are in New York.
So in those types of situations, what was, I think I'm just confused, what was the plan? Were they planning on just having a pile of money and then when they retired they just bleed
it dry?
They
were going to live off of that, yes. Like if they had a lot of stock, they were just going to live off of that. Now, some of these stocks pay dividends, so that's going to help a lot. But some don't, or the dividends are small, it won't help. And remember, you've got all the fees to pay also. So sometimes it doesn't translate as to as much as you thought it would, okay?
So then I think this might be an important topic to bring up or something that we don't really explore a whole lot. Just because somebody has enough set aside to retire doesn't mean that they've got enough, because there's a difference between having enough and having enough long term, because you can't just drain that account dry. You can't just hemorrhage money until you run out. You've got to replenish it, and maybe people aren't necessarily going that far with the planning process. They're just saying, okay, I've saved enough, here it is, I'm going to go. But
well,
there's a second step.
On all our accounts, we liquidate their stock. We put it into the life settlement policy. So, you know, they know right then we have got it going the right direction, because they know that there's interest coming in on this. They know that every time a policy matures, they get paid the principal plus the interest. If the interest is 12%, it's added on. If it's 24%, it's added to their principal. So they can see the interest coming. You know, you don't have to sell stock to get paid. We've already done that. We've already converted all the stock to policies, to life policies, that they get interest on. So they've got interest coming all the time, and they know it.
And the idea is to stagger step some of these policies, so that at least the general concept is that there's always something coming in every several months or year or whatever it happens to be when a policy matures. That's kind of the idea, so that there's always forward momentum. There's always movement going on the account.
That's exactly right. And we try to stair step it, like you say, where that every year they've got interest that has matured. And you know, we talked about this last 2 weeks. The guy that has had 20 maturities.
Wow.
That's a lot of interest. And we've got some that have had maybe 7 or 8, you know. And so that gives you a lot of income that you can stack up and take every year. And a lot of people have definite deals. They say, I want $60,000 a year to live on. So you've got to keep that much cash in their accounts at all times. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of people come to us and they say, invest all but $200,000. And that's what we do. We set aside $200,000 and keep it for them at all times.
And that's that they can access at any time.
At any time. And we've got a lot of people that say, okay, I want to take $50,000 out, okay? Then we've got, the next time a policy comes due, we've got to replenish that $50,000 and keep it up to what their goals are. And we can't use that money. So we do it however they want. And then we've got people that come to us and say, look, I will not need any of this money for 2 to 3 years. Invest it all. We won't take anything out for several years. So in that case, then we've got more to invest. We don't have to keep a cash account. But lots of people do. We have to keep a cash account where that they'll always have cash money at any time they need it.
Okay, so this is a well thought out plan. You know, if somebody needs, you know, say I take $50,000 out, then your next step is to replace that $50,000. It's not just take it out and then okay, we're down $50,000. How much more do we have left? That's not the concept at all. It's you replace what comes out.
That's right. And so if whatever came out, the next time one comes due, we have to replace it because we know that was our agreement. It was $200,000 at all times. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've got some, it's $60,000 a year, or it's $90,000 a year, whatever they need to live on. But we know that in advance, so we can make plans for it.
So it's generally not a good idea to just hemorrhage money, and then when your account runs dry, your retirement is done.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
Because then you're going back to work. And
that's right.
So long retirement.
And, I mean, that would not be a good retirement.
No.
So if you've got $500,000 and you're just taking it direct out of that with no interest income, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, you're not planning for retirement. You're planning on just a long vacation.
That's exactly right. And lots of times in the stock market, they'll say, okay, you can take $25,000 a year. That's all you can take. So you have to set this up where it's actually enough to live on. You know? You can't just say, all I can take is $25,000. Well, you're not going to be able to live on that.
Yeah.
You know? Now, a lot of our customers have ranches, they have rent houses, they have all types of investments. So, you know, when we say, how do you want to do this? They tell us which pocket to start taking their interest out of. And so that's the way we do it.
Okay, so you've got different, I don't know what you call it. You got different accounts, I guess, set up.
Yes, they have a lot of different accounts.
Okay.
You know, as I said, they have ranch income when they sell cattle, when they, you know, do different things on their ranch. If they have a farm, they may have, you know, all kinds of things planted where in the summer they get the income of all their crops. Then sometimes you have a bad crop. So that year they don't get anything off of that. So we have to know which one we can count on.
Okay. So and then
whether it's ranch income or, like you say, rental income. You know, we know we can count on that if they should need it.
So then, when it's time to reinvest, you're just moving money from one account to another. Nothing is being cashed out. Nothing is, you know, you're avoiding taxes this way. You're rolling, you know, from one fund to another fund, and just it's all a liquid. It's a liquid process.
Yes, and of course, as I said, we know all this going in. We try to plan for it and to plan for their life, where they'll have plenty of interest the rest of their life, and hopefully they will not get into the principal unless they start spending a tremendous amount of money.
So it is possible for somebody who has the assets to do it. It is possible that if somebody has not been planning for retirement for 10, 15, 20 years, they've got their investments, they've got their assets, they've got all these different accounts, 401ks and whatnot. It is possible to get to retirement and then start, for lack of a better term, planning for retirement by just taking that money that they've got and then growing it from that point going forward.
That's right. And, you know, there's just all kinds of different ways to do this. And most of our people are well off. You know, they have done well in life. And so it works out. You know, they're not coming to us with $100,000 saying, this is all I've got in the world. That's not going to work. And they have to be accredited, really, to work with us, unless they're doing annuities. But if they're accredited, they've got $200,000 in income from the husband. Doesn't even count what the wife makes. And they're worth $1 million without their home. That's their account in their 401k, their IRAs, their annuities, their ranches, rent houses, whatever they have.
Okay.
You know, all those are good assets.
But the main residence does not count?
No, not in Texas.
Okay, so what about the person who owns their business? I assume that counts as an asset, right?
Yes, we have a lot of people that are with us that own their businesses, and they're worth, you know, from $1 million to $6 million.
So that type of
they have a lot of assets. But they don't have a 401k because it's an individually owned business. So they bring us cash, and we put it into the investments for them.
I see. So there's really an infinite amount of different scenarios. You just have to meet these criteria, and then from that point forward, you customize the plan for each individual person. Where are they at now? Where are they starting at? Where do they need to be? How much do they need to make each year? And obviously, it's not like a salary. I mean, it's an investment in a life insurance policy. So, you know, things may go over. Things may come in early. It's not like a steady, you know, here on June 4th, you're going to get this check for this month. It's not like that at all. But over time, you grow your money, and it really, if anything does go over, other policies will come early, and it all evens out in the end.
Yes, it does. It always works out. And, you know, if we planned it right, it's going to work.
So when somebody comes to you for the first time and they say, okay, I hear you say that we need to be, you know, stair-stepped and staggered so that we've always got something coming in. How does it work? Say they come in and they have $300,000. They say, okay, put some in this, this, and this. Or do you say, okay, well, let's start out with $100,000 in this policy, and then let's wait 4 months.
I don't do it that way, because if they're fixing to retire, they've got to get it going.
Okay,
it's not like, oh, we'll just sit back and do this, this, and this. I recommend that we invest all of it if they're not going to need it for at least 2 years.
Okay.
And they will start getting income and interest right away. And that's usually the way we do it. And then usually after the first policy matures, they'll come and bring more. They'll say, okay, we've got another $300,000 we want to put in. Like you say, they may be cautious the first time. They may not give me but $300,000, or they may give $300,000 and say, okay, put $150,000 and save the other for a few months, and we'll do that. We don't care how they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do it like they want it done. Remember, with us, it's their money. It's not our money. It's not like in the stock market where they just put it all out and whatever happens, happens. It's not that way.
No,
it's their money. It's their retirement. And they have the say-so about the ultimate say-so.
And it's a very well-informed type of investment, because when you're investing in a life settlement, it means that somebody has had to sell their policy or wanted to sell their policy. It's not always a desperate act that they need to do. Sometimes they just want to. Sometimes, you know, they've got their every policy that you bid on, we should back up for a minute, every policy that you bid on is somebody who has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Now, that we say that sometimes they can is sometimes they use it for treatment and then they may have to. But then other people just want to go ahead and settle their estate ahead of time.
That's exactly right. Even though they know that they're dying of cancer, they've got two choices. They can either, if they need the treatments and they're low on money, the life insurance policy is the first thing they reach for. Or they have enough for treatment, but they need to settle the estate now. Most of our people, if it's a large policy, they're just trying to settle the estate, and they know they have just a few months left. So they want to do it themselves rather than waiting and have the executor or the trustee do it.
Okay.
So that's what they want to do it themselves.
Okay.
So that's the way that works.
So then, like we say, you know, there's a couple of different reasons that people sell their policy, and we all know that cancer treatment is very, very expensive. So for that person, they're diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. They say, my goodness, I need to go ahead and sell my policy. For this to work, for them to get that lump sum of cash, they need somebody to bid on it. And that's how you end up with these policies, is you're bidding against other companies who are also trying to get these policies.
That's right. And it's a very, very competitive market. You know, there's three or four companies that are big enough to do what we do. and they're very competitive, and we have to bid hard, and sometimes we don't get every policy we want. But we're in there bidding every day, trying, you know, to get the very best policies we can.
We haven't talked about this in a while, but you're very selective about the policies that you even bid on. You don't even bid on all the policies that come across your desk. You eject a lot, don't you?
I did this week. This was a bad week for that. We had several policies that came that didn't meet the criteria.
Like,
well, one was a B-rated company. It was a good policy, and I really wanted it. But it wasn't with an A-rated company. So there's a lot more risk if it's a B-rated. I think a B-rated company would probably pay their claim, but they might not. I mean, it depends what their financial situation really is.
That's an unnecessary risk.
It is an unnecessary risk. Don't do it. So then we had three that did not appear to be stage four. I said, go back. You've got to prove to me it is stage four. Now, there's a few cancers that are only stage three, but these should have all been stage four, and I said, prove it. Because,
so,
as you know, we do not want anything that is not terminal. If you're not terminal, we're not doing this.
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up. There are some cancers that are that only go to stage three. There is no stage four. What are those? Because I don't really know.
Well, I can't even tell you right off. It's one of them is one I had never even heard of, and it's very rare. And we bought a policy like that, if you remember, several months ago. At first, I turned it down, and they came back and told me it only goes to stage three. I mean, you're dead at stage three, not stage four. And so we did a lot of research on it. We found it's a very rare cancer, and I can't even remember the kind that it was.
Okay, so we're talking about some rare instances with lesser known, I guess, forms of cancer.
Yes, it was.
But very, very deadly.
Yes, it's very deadly, and it's also very rare, and they don't have a lot of experience with it.
What are some other stage four cancers that really, you know, you go after those hot and heavy when you start to see those come across?
Well, pancreatic is always my first choice because it is very deadly. People that they bring us the policies, if it shows 18 months, it's usually 9, especially if we have a Fasano. Fasano is the best on this type of cancer. They know it well. And if they say it's 18 months, we know it's just 9. Because they're very conservative, and they'll go out a lot farther than what the cancer will. We know them well.
So the odds of something like that, in that situation, the odds of that coming in early are excellent. And you love those when a policy comes in early.
And stomach cancer. Stomach cancer, people don't even know it until they already have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, your chances of living over 2 years is just almost nil.
Okay.
Because they're going to operate, they're going to do all this, but I've never seen anybody survive it.
Now, I know, and we hadn't talked about this in several months, but I know at one point oral cancers were starting to come up on your radar is maybe these might be a little bit more appealing policies to buy than what we may have original thought. Have you had any oral types of cancers come across in the last several months?
Yes, we bought three policies that were oral cancer. They were tonsil. And it went from the tonsils down the neck, lungs, it went everywhere. And the people did not survive very long.
Wow.
Did not. And so it's the first time we've experienced that type. Usually they don't even come to us. But yes, we've had three.
Okay. Because I know, most of us think of cancer, and we think of, I guess, the high-profile cases, you know, breast cancer, brain cancer, lung cancer, different things like that. And so, you know, then there's a lot of other types of cancers that don't necessarily get the, the attention that some do. But you've been doing this so long that you recognize these things and you recognize these sort of rare types of cancers. And that's where you can either, you already go in with some kind of experience with these types of things. And you have that sense where, you know, hey, I've dealt with this before, or, you know, people may not know much about this, but this is something that's on our radar. And so, you know, a lot of situations that most people don't generally know about, at least in the mainstream.
Well, and we've found also cancer can start out in the lungs, different places, and then the doctors always check to see it if it went to the brain. Because after it goes in your body, lots of times it'll go straight up to the brain.
Oh, wow.
And we've bought a lot of those. And once it gets in the brain, they may fool around and try to do surgery, but it will come back in the brain. I've never seen one that didn't. I've known two different people personally that they got it and they didn't last long, 12 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done this long enough so you see these signs. And when you're looking at a new policy, we talked about this a little while ago, about how well informed of an investment this is. So when you look at a policy for the first time, you know literally everything about the policy holder, and you share that information with the investor. So the so say I come in to the office and I say, hey, Faye, I know nothing about cancer other than, you know, these cancers they say on the news are very bad. I'm not a doctor. I don't speak medical speak. How do I know that I know what this policy is about? You show them stuff.
Well, yes, and we have a complete workup from the doctors, whoever did the LE for us, and it tells you when it started, what the treatment's been, what the diagnosis was, and what the final diagnosis is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's real important. The final words they say, is it progressing, a progressive cancer, you know, whatever it is, it'll tell it right there.
Okay, because they're watching these over time, and so they see, you know, what trajectory it's on. Is it making progress, or is it going into remission? So they can kind of track it, which helps, obviously, get more of an idea of which direction it's heading in. Somebody who's going into remission, do you bid on that or no?
No, we'll set it aside.
Okay.
I would love to, because I know it's coming back, but see, we don't have an assurance.
Yeah.
We don't know when it's coming back, so you can't take that risk.
See, so that's even another layer of I guess, not protection, but informed decision-making, I guess, that you don't get with something like, you know, Wall Street. It's like you can do trajectories all day long with a particular stock on Wall Street, and then all of a sudden you go to bed, you know, you're doing fine one night, you wake up the next morning, and you've lost everything. So the trajectory on with that type of investment doesn't mean anything at all, I guess, in the long run. But with a life settlement, it really is. It's very, very important, and it actually holds true in most cases. Is that right?
Yes, and we try to, you know, do the best job we can. We try to always get a policy that we know everything about it, that we know when it's going to come due, and that we believe that's when it will truly come due.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they go over, and if that's the case, then people would have to pay the premiums. And that's one of the risks of this type of investment.
That's right. There's three risks that I see. First one, the biggest risk of all, is it could go over. You have to be prepared for it to go over. That the doctors had made a mistake, that they couldn't see in their body, and it did go over. So that can happen. The second risk is it is not liquid during that time. Now, everybody knows that, but we stress it and stress it. But from the time you get in the policy till you get out, that's not liquid till it matures. So you have to know that. But our people are accredited, so they do know that, of course. Then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under, you would have to wait till the company was sold by the state or the Texas Guarantee Fund, which would cover you. Okay?
Okay. And to put this kind of in perspective, when we talk about, you know, policy going over and somebody may have to pay the premiums, we're talking about a very small percentage of the profit margin, right?
Yes. Unless it's those old policies we keep talking about. Now, if they accidentally have one of those, you know, the premiums are high and the people are 95 and they haven't died yet, folks.
They're going to outlive all of us combined.
That's right. We got rookered on that deal. The people that brought us to this just flat lied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've never done an old person since.
And so now you have checks
and balances. We do not do the elderly.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's a difference between being old and being sick.
Old people are not sick. They're just old, bless their hearts.
Yeah.
And anybody's got those policies, you know, you're not going to make any money. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, but you don't do those anymore.
We've not done any since this fiasco.
So you're just waiting for those really to roll off, and then you're free and clear of those.
That's right. We're just waiting for those to end.
And you no longer have an opportunity. It cannot happen anymore where somebody can quote unquote lie because you have so many different checks and balances in place that you're verifying, you know, two and three and four times, you know, to make sure that you're dealing with facts and not just what somebody says on the telephone.
Remember, we're not buying them from a company. We're direct with the people, as brokers that own the policies. We're direct on everything. We're not brokering anything. A long time ago, you know, we brokered a lot of policies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we got burned. Our clients got burned on that. So we're just waiting for those few policies to end.
So, and I know we kind of touched on it earlier, and we're kind of hinting to it now, that sometimes policies do go over, and somebody may have to pay the premium. Have you ever had, and I'm putting you on the spot here, and I'm asking you a question we've never talked about before, but have you ever had, and there's a follow-up to this, have you ever had somebody come in, invest for the first time, and their very first policy goes over?
I don't remember if a first policy's ever went over. We've had new people come in and their policies have went over, but I don't know, remember if it was first or second. I don't think it was the first one, maybe. But we do have people that their policies are over. They were not accredited. A long time ago, we did people that were not accredited. And so that's where they are. Their policies have went over. So they can go over. You have to always be prepared. And if you're accredited, it will not hurt you because you know that you can afford the premiums, okay?
So for somebody who's investing, and we say over time it all evens out, so if somebody has one go over towards the beginning of their, their investment life, I guess, so even if it's their second or third, when it goes over, do they panic, do they freak out, or do they say, like, well, that premium wasn't that bad. It was nowhere near as bad as I thought. It was just a small fraction. Let's keep going.
Most people have that attitude, unless it's an old policy, and their attitude might not be that great. But all the people in the last 5 years, yes, their policies are not that much.
Okay.
But as I said, we've got some older policies that the premium was higher, but now we're very careful when we buy a policy as to how much premium is owed. There's a difference between the premium on a term life policy and the premium on a whole life. Whole life is a lot more expensive. So we try to buy only term life because it is a lot cheaper.
So you have very specific parameters of you know, policies and terms and all this that you're looking at. So your guidelines are very tight.
That's right. They have to be. We don't want any premium over 3% of the face amount.
Because the idea here is to have the safest investment possible, not just to bid on anything willy-nilly.
That's right. And some of our big policies that we've done that have matured, we knew the premium was high. So what we did, we had to put like 45 people in it to get the premium down.
Hmm.
So that's what we did.
Okay.
We put a huge amount of people where the premium would be very small.
So the whole concept, whether it's, you know, from the policy itself to how many people are in it to the types of people that are in it to how long you know it goes, this is all a very fluid situation, and it's always morphing. It's always changing. Each individual investment is completely different. Nothing is cookie cutter. It's all customized.
That's right. It can't be cookie cutter with what we do.
Awesome.
It's got to be, every bit's got to be individualized.
Which just makes it even just that much more secure and more safe. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And we should point out that's your office number. And so you'll be back in the office on Monday. And so people can call and make an appointment to come visit you then. Now, every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. And you always bring interesting things to the table, whether it's a place to go, something to visit, some kind of Texas trivia. What are we talking about today?
Okay, today is a place to go. And it sounds to me like, in my opinion, it's unusual. you know. But this is one along the river. Now, some Dallas natives, Blake Smith, he lived in Uganda, and he worked on a nonprofit jewelry brand. And he would spend his week in tree houses, echo lodges, going on safari, and he stayed in tents all the time. So anyway, this planted a seed in his head for his latest venture. It's called Walden Retreats.
Ooh.
Now, he opened the first location in April in South Texas near Johnson City. Now, Johnson City, as you probably know, is about an hour from Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got 2 500-square-feet safari-style canvas tents. Can you believe this?
Wow.
Complete with air conditioning, they have wood stoves, king-size bed, they have coffee makers. It's on 96 acres of private land along the Pedernales River. Now, can you believe this? Have you ever stayed in a hotel that was in a tent?
I have not. It sounds pretty cool, though.
I thought it'd be pretty dadgum interesting. It's right there on the Pedernales River, and these are 500 square feet safari canvas tents. Has everything that you'd want if you're out on the river.
So it's outdoor camping, but in luxury.
It's in luxury tents along the river.
Wow. I'm trying to picture this in my brain, and it's just blowing my mind a little.
It'll blow everybody's mind. It's a brand new concept. Now, whether it's going to be successful, I don't know.
So tents actually have air conditioning, if I understand this right.
Oh, yeah, there's air conditioning. There's coffee makers, king-size beds.
An actual bed
in a tent. In a tent.
Not a sleeping bag on the ground.
No. It's a luxury tent.
How big are these things?
Do what?
How big are these tents? My goodness, they have to be huge.
They would have to be. Well, they said they're 500 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. But you're in a tent along the river. In a king-size bed. Can you feature this? I just can't feature this whole story.
I can't either. I'm going to have to Google this after a while because I want to see pictures. Man, this sounds amazing. It almost sounds too good to be. It's like the best of both worlds. It's like the best of camping, but still the best of comfort.
Oh, yeah, you're completely comfortable. He has coffee makers, air conditioning, but you're in a tent on the river.
There's nothing worse than going camping and trying to sleep, and it's so hot, the ground is so uncomfortable, and you're sweating like crazy. It's just not fun. And so this just sounds like it's too good to be true.
Well, and it's on 96 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, plenty of space out there on the ground and everything.
Wow.
But I've never heard of such.
I wonder if he'll get into like building like tent communities where people can like actually live.
I don't think he's going that far. But, you know, he was in Uganda. He was, you know, doing all this stuff, and that's when he came up with all this.
Wow!
And he said, "You know, if it'll work here in Africa and all these places, I'll take that idea home."
Wow!
Yeah,
that is brilliant.
This is his first one. He says he's going to open more.
And where is this?
This is right there by Johnson City on the Pedernales River.
Well, I see a summer road trip coming up in my near future.
I think you should go and investigate. Let me know, because I have not been to this place.
Mm.
And it's called Walden Retreats.
Walden Retreats. Let me write that down.
Yeah.
Retreats.
It has a wood stove.
Ooh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's right there near Johnson City. It's an hour from Austin.
That's just, that sounds like a wonderful way to spend either a weekend or maybe a long weekend or like an entire week. This just sounds fascinating to me. And there's groups of them, right? So there's like a bunch of tents, so you have like neighbors and stuff like that.
He said there's 2 tents.
2.
That's what it says.
Well, he's got to open up that so there's a whole community, because I can see like a lot of people getting together and hanging out, sitting by the campfire at night, and everybody comes out of their tent and they sing campfire songs.
Think about a 500 square foot tent.
That's huge.
That's huge.
I mean, for a tent.
Yeah, I don't even know about a tent that big myself.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen one.
But he's going to open more of them.
Yeah, I bet he will. I wonder if he's been successful.
Well, we don't know. This is his first one.
Wow. I hope
and
it works.
He said he learned all this living in tree houses in Uganda.
It's amazing. It's amazing to bring sort of like that type of like culture into present day, into our own backyard, so to speak, and then to beef it up and kick it up a notch and make it so luxurious and comfortable. This is fascinating. I see it in my future. Walden Retreats, you said, right?
Yes, and he said the other way he got the inspiration was going on safari and staying in tents all the time.
Wow. Which I'm sure his were not air-conditioned. They were probably hot and uncomfortable.
And he opened this in April. It's brand new.
Wow. So he hadn't even been there but a couple months.
That's right.
Awesome.
And his website, let me give you that.
Oh, okay.
It's WaldenRetreats.com.
WaldenRetreats.com. Yeah, I got to go see these pictures.
Yeah, I want you to look at the pictures, look at the situation, and give me some feedback on this trip.
Yeah, definitely. That's on my bucket list now for this summer. So,
I thought that was a good deal because I'd never heard of one in my lifetime.
No, me neither.
I've just never heard of a retreat in a tent that's luxurious.
Yeah, it took a second to try and put all the pieces together in my brain, but it sounds fascinating. It sounds awesome.
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Especially, you're out there in the wilderness and you got a dadgum king size.
I know. It doesn't get much better than that. You kind of reconnect with nature, but you're still comfortable and not all hot and sweaty.
And the wood stove. I don't know where that comes from.
I guess it's just because it's rustic. I think it sounds awesome. Wow, this is fascinating.
Yeah. So anyway, I want feedback on how wonderful this really is.
I will write you a 4-page essay.
I want an essay on it. I mean, you know, we know about hotels around the world, and now we've got a hotel tent.
Nice. I love it. That sounds brilliant. It sounds very interesting to me.
I think it will be.
Oh. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're 3105 Big Spring, next to Ivy Cottage.
So what do people do when they start, when they get to that retirement stage? Do they say, okay, Faye, here's what I want to do. I want to travel, I want to do this, I want to do that, and I'm going to spend 5 years doing it and then settle down. And so to do all this traveling and to do all this whatever they want to do, they need so much money. So what are the highlights of things that people do when they first retire?
They travel extensively. You know, they may go to Europe, they may go to England, they may go, you know, Italy. I mean, just there's all kinds of places. Then we have the people that are just going in the United States. But almost everybody will take a trip to Europe or somewhere. You know, they may go to Holland. I've had friends this last year went to Holland. Ooh. And cruised. And the only thing they did not like about Holland is you have to get up and go with the group every morning.
Oh.
You can't say, we're laying in bed today. No, 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 no.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I would say be careful of the types of cruises, you know.
Yeah.
Find one that says you can do what you want to do.
Yeah. That lets you sleep for 3 weeks if you want to.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to get up, my Lord. But they have the Viking company has those Viking cruises down all the rivers in Europe that are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people that have done that. I know people that have flown to Italy and stayed for a month.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's all different levels of fun. And then there's other people that just say, I'm going to tour Texas and the United States.
Nice.
So you never know what they're going to spend, is what I'm saying.
Exactly. So there's a wide variety of things that people want to do and a wide variety of budgets that they need to do it. But in order to get to that place where you can, whatever you want to do in retirement, you've got to get the planning started. And so for somebody who has like a 401k and they've got, you know, a little of this, a little of that, they've got maybe a few things in the stock market, do you recommend somebody stays diversified with a number of different types of investments, or should people be a little bit more focused?
Well, it depends how much they've got. Now, we have people, as I said, they have rent houses. They're driving them crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I had rent houses, I used to have rent houses a long time ago, but mine was apartments. And I want to tell you something. It will make your blood pressure go up. I don't think you'll live as long. That's just my personal opinion. I mean, rent houses, you know, you're responsible if the plumbing goes out, if the electric goes out, everything. And remember, renters don't take care of anything. So it can be a problem. But if you're hardy enough, you can do it. So if they've got rent houses, they've got income from that. If they go out of town very long, they have a problem. So most investments, if it doesn't take daily work, it's a good thing. You know, if you don't have to be there every day, you're okay.
You talk a lot about how people procrastinate before they start really getting serious about retirement. Do you find that there is an event or some kind of a trigger or something that happens to make people go ahead and start? Or is it just kind of like they've stumbled into it and kind of get lucky?
I don't really know what happens. I know they'll talk to themselves and to each other. They'll talk to me. They may come in. And they might not do it for months after that. You never know. And some people, in 2 weeks, they're back and ready to do it. I have a lot of people. They'll talk to me. They'll call back in 2 weeks, make an appointment. We get it done.
Okay. So I've talked to some people before who have said that, okay, I don't do it. I don't get started. I haven't done it yet because it's so time consuming to get everything, you know, rolling. And then it just, I don't have that kind of time. So for somebody who has that type of mentality and that type of image of getting ready for retirement, is this being this big, huge, cumbersome thing? Is that accurate or is it like a fairly quick process?
It's quick. We do most of the work. If it's a 401k, they have to call the employer and say, roll this over, okay? If it's an IRA, we do it for them. We do the rollover. We do the paperwork. We do everything. And we help them with all the paperwork. We help them sort things out. We help them figure out which policies which that they have or which investment. We get all the account numbers. We do all that for them. So they're not working very hard, okay?
So what's the time commitment for somebody who's just getting started, who wants to come in? How much are they looking at to dedicating to getting started with something like this?
Well, not a lot of time, probably 2.5 hours, 3.
That's
altogether.
It?
Yeah, because the first visit's an hour, and then when they make up their mind, they come back, they bring all the papers, we fill them all out, get everything rolling. And then if we forget something or have to change something, we call them and have them come back in. So they may come in 2 or 3 times.
Okay. Because I was talking to somebody this past week, and they said, oh, my gosh, it takes weeks or a couple of months to do something
no,
like this.
Doesn't.
And that's what scared them, and so I told them I'd ask.
No. What we do is most of the work. Now, it may take 2.5, 3 weeks to get the money over to us. Whoever the broker is, they may ask for something else, but usually it doesn't. Usually it's pretty smooth.
It's not, like, if it does take that kind of time, it's not that, you know, the investor is doing anything. It's just we're waiting for things to get through the funnel.
That's right. And if we have a problem, we call our client and say, you need to call the broker and tell them this is what you need done today.
Okay. And then they call, so we can, a quick phone call.
Yeah, they'll give them hacking. And tell the broker to get on the ball and get it done. They're tired of waiting.
Okay. So then for somebody who's coming in and hasn't done this before, how long would it take to actually get into a policy and get the ball rolling? At least, like, actively invested?
Probably 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
You know, not long. If the money gets there, then it's invested immediately. usually.
So just kind of depends on how quickly things roll over and things like that. But as far as the actual what somebody has to physically do, it's not like they're going in and preparing taxes, because that's the impression that a lot of people get, I think, from what I hear from people.
It's a lot faster than that. Okay?
and a lot less paperwork to sign and a lot less
anxiety. We don't want to get in that.
Wonderful. All right, so Faye, for somebody who is about ready to come in and they want to get started, what should they do before they come see you for the first time?
Gather up all their papers where we can look at and see what their assets are, what their income is, what they need to do to get this solidified.
So if somebody's not organized, if you need to take like a couple of weeks and just casually get your things together, fine, that's okay. There's no time limit. There's no expiration date for anything like this. For somebody who is organized, they probably have a lot of this already together in a place.
That's right. And they have all their account numbers together. Lots of times people come in, I don't know the account numbers. You have to have your account numbers. We can't do it without it.
They should have that anyway.
That's right.
Even if they're not coming to see you, they should know all that stuff just for their own.
It should all be in a file. It should all be in a file.
All right. So gather up your files, figure out your assets, and then come in and see you. And so when people come see you for the first time, they don't necessarily have to begin right away. You find sometimes people come in, it's the husband, and then he goes home and talks to the wife, and then the wife comes in. So it's really, you do this at whatever pace anybody wants to go at, right?
That's exactly right.
Fantastic. All right, Faye, well, one last time, what is your phone number for people to come see you next week?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.